नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी।
हरे कृष्णा। सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम द श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 47 टेक्स्ट नंबर 58।
एता परं तनुभृतो भुवि गोपवद्भो गोविंद एव निखिलात्मनिरूढभावा वांछन्ति यद्भवभियो मुनयो वयं च किं ब्रह्म जन्मभिरनन्त कथारसस्य एता परं तनुभृतो भुवि गोपवद्भो गोविंद एव निखिलात्मनिरूढभावा वांछन्ति यद्भवभियो मुनयो वयं च किं ब्रह्म जन्मभिरनन्त कथारसस्य एता परं तनुभृतो भुवि गोपवद्भो गोविंद एव निखिलात्मनिरूढभावा वांछन्ति यद्भवभियो मुनयो वयं च किं ब्रह्म जन्मभिरनन्त कथारसस्य एता परं तनुभृतो मुनिगोपवद्भो गोविंद एव निखिलात्मनिरूढभावा मुनयो वयं च किं जन्म
माताजीस।
एता परं तनुभृतो गोपवद्भो गोविंद एव निखिलात्मनिरूढभावा वांछन्ति यद्भवभियो मुनयो वयं च किं जन्म जन्म भिरनन्त
एता दीज विमेन परम अलोन तनु देयर बॉडीज Bhrita, maintain successfully. Bhuvi, on the earth. Gopavadhva, the young cowherd women. Govinde, for Lord Krishna. Eva, exclusively. Nikhila, of all. Atmani, the soul. Rudha, perfected. Bhava, ecstatic loving attraction. Vanchanti, their desire. Yat, which. Bhava, material existence. Bhiya, those who are afraid of. Munaya, sages. Vayam, we. Cha, also. Kim, what use. Brahma, as a Brahmana or as Lord Brahma. Janmabhi, with births. Ananta, of the unlimited Lord. Katha, for the topics. Rasasya, for one who has a taste. Translation purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Uddhava sang, among all persons on earth, these cowherd women alone have actually perfected their embodied lives, for they have achieved the perfection of unalloyed love for Lord Govinda. Their pure love is hankered after by those who fear material existence, by great sages, and by ourselves as well. For one who has tasted the narrations of the Infinite Lord, what is the use of taking birth as a high-class Brahmana, or even as Lord Brahma himself? Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that here the term Brahma Janmabhi, Brahminical births, refer to the threefold births by seminal parenthood, sacred thread initiation, and sacrificial initiation. These cannot compare to pure Krishna consciousness. In fact, Sri Uddhava, who spoke this verse, took birth as a pure Brahmana. But he deprecates this position in comparison to that of the exalted gopis. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Nilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagat the song of the bee, and Uddhava is now beginning to speak. He is going to express his appreciation and admiration for the ecstatic mood and bhava of the gopis. And this is the first verse that Uddhava is speaking. So in the purport we find how Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is talking about three kinds of births. Seminal parenthood, sacred thread initiation and sacrificial initiation. Seminal birth is the regular birth that we all undergo. Second birth is the sacred thread initiation, which is the which is called as dvija. Prabhupada refers to it as dvija. Or when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master and agrees to follow all the regulative principles. Sanatan Goswami quotes this verse where he says, just like a bell metal when mixed with mercury turns into gold, similarly a person who may be born in the lowest family, chandala or mlecha, whatever, he can be transformed into a pure brahmana by accepting initiation from a spiritual master. So that, we don't even know the technology of how to convert a bell metal into gold. Probably that is lost now. But still, it seems that was there existing some time ago. So just as a bell metal is converted into gold, similarly a low-born person can be converted into a pure brahmana just by that initiation process. So every human being is expected to ideally undergo this process of taking initiation. The basic four regulative principles that we follow is meant to make us a human being, to help us avoid from falling into the lower grades of animalistic life. No meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication and no gambling are principles that make a human being a human being. They are not meant to, they won't give you transcendental experience. So when you take initiation, you vow to follow these four principles. So that's how we become a dvija or brahmana. And Prabhupada then compares the second sacrificial initiation to our second initiation, where you are allowed to worship the Vishnu deity and enter into the deity room, cook for the deity, worship the deity. So that is sacrificial initiation. But here the purport says these cannot compare to pure Krishna consciousness. A devotee who is practicing pure devotion service is above all these births. One who is performing, rendering pure devotion service has already undergone all these purificatory processes of initiation. Even though externally he may not have accepted the process of initiation, it is concluded that he is on the level of pure devotion service, much, much above than the regular ordinary brahmana. So that's the conclusion of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur here. And Prabhupada in the purport talks about the Garbhadhan Sanskar, how a child, before he is born, the parents have to undergo purificatory ceremonies by which they can attract a pure living entity into this world. Because that science is not practiced in modern times, therefore you find Varna Sankara population, all human beings on the level of Shudras or much lower than that. So all this chaos in the world is because we don't have good population. Problem is not overpopulation, problem is lack of good population. So therefore this initiation ceremony or purificatory process is so important, and somehow if we can introduce that process in human society, that will really create peace and happiness in society. So Uddhava is expressing here admiration for the bhava and devotion of the gopis, especially Srimati Radharani, and he is totally spellbound by that mood of the gopis, especially of the Radharani, and Radharani's song with the bee, conversation with the bee, how she is criticizing Krishna, appreciating Krishna. So Radharani is the embodiment of that Mahabhav. There is this famous verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, how Mahabhava Swarupa Shri Radha Thakurani Sarva Gunakhani Krishna Kanta Shiromani. Mahabhava Surupa. Radharani is the embodiment of Mahabhava. And Prabhupada in the purport writes, the essence of the Hladini Shakti is love of Godhead. The essence of love of Godhead is Bhava or transcendental sentiment. And the highest pitch of that Bhava is called Mahabhava. Srimati Radharani is the personified embodiment of these three aspects of transcendental consciousness. She is therefore the highest principle in love of Godhead and is the supreme lovable object of Krishna. So, and the gopis are not much ahead, much below Radharani. They are also on that topmost platform of ecstatic loving separation. So, as conditioned living entities, we are unable to even appreciate what is being discussed here. Yesterday we were discussing how the chapter is so long. Some devotees are feeling the chapter is so long and all these concepts are so high beyond our comprehension. And we are eager to enter into Mathura Leela and Dwarka Leela. So, because it is too advanced, too beyond our conception, comprehension. So, the absorption that the gopis are expressing is what is our aspiration is. One day we hope by our practice of sadhana bhakti we will reach raganuga bhakti and hopefully bhava bhakti and prema bhakti one day. So in the fourth canto there is this interesting section of Prachaitas praying to Lord Vishnu, where they compare Krishna to a Parijata flower. It's an interesting verse. Parijate inja salabdhe sarango nyan na sevate tadangri moolam asadya sakshat kim kim vrini mahi. Dear Lord, when the bee approaches a celestial tree called the Parijat, it certainly does not leave the tree because there is no need for such action. Similarly, when we have approached your lotus feet and taken shelter of them, what further benediction we may ask of you? So just like a bee approaches various flowers searching for nectar, goes into one flower, takes out some nectar, another flower, takes out another nectar. And in this way it's approaching so many flowers, collecting nectar. But it is said when it finally approaches Parijata flower, that's the end of its search. Because that nectar completely satisfies the bee. And it has no need to search out for more nectar from other flowers. So similarly, Prachaitara is saying, when a devotee takes shelter at your lotus feet, O Lord, that is the end of his search for happiness and satisfaction. So this is the nature of our conditioned mind. I read an article on about boredom in Scientific American, a magazine, where it says, bored to death. How people are in these times, bored to death, chronically bored to death. It's a disease. And what is contributing to this boredom is television, internet, all these modern facilities, which are supposed to make you happy, the same things are contributing to their boredom. So just like, so the nature of the mind is you go to one object, you get some happiness and satisfaction, enjoyment. Immediately after some enjoyment, it finds that object boring. Then looks for another object which sounds exciting, appears exciting, enjoys it for some time, jumps to another object. Krishna acknowledges this point in the Gita. He says, yato yato nishchalati manaschanchalam asthiram. Mind is nishchalati, always unsteady, flickering. Manaschanchalam asthiram, chanchal. But tatastato niyametad atmanneva vashamnayet. We have to somehow bring the mind back, focus it on Krishna. So the nature of the mind is always keep jumping from one object to another. It will keep jumping until it finds an object that can completely satisfy its hankerings. And actually we are all searching for that object. We feel some object can give us satisfaction, and it is so the nature, after some time you get bored, and you find, look for another object, and it's the nature that you will get bored. It's natural. But it's not natural for us to keep jumping from one object to another. And we need to convince ourselves that there can be an object that can completely fulfill our mental desires, spiritual desires, hankerings. And unless we reach that object, we will keep jumping. The interesting thing is, the first object, when you get bored, then you go to second, third, and finally again the first object finds it attractive after some time. And in this way, this goes on and on and on. So people change, people watch movies, one movie is there, released, excited. 3 days, 4 days it lasts, go to the next movie. You go change TV channels, hoping excitement will be there in some channel. I remember the email, when email was launched, that was so exciting. You eagerly look forward to logging into your email and check what is the latest message, new email, someone has sent something, some message. And that gets bored. Email is no longer attractive. Then you have the social media, Facebook and all. And then WhatsApp came up the listing. Now you are tired of even WhatsApp messages. Every day you open the WhatsApp thing, 50, 100 messages. And many of the messages are same, repetitive. So 10 groups you have, everyone sends the same message. So it's such a boring thing. You are tired of even these things. Now you are wondering, what is the new technology going to come up that can give that excitement and stimulation? So that's the nature of the mind. Nothing of this material world can give us that permanent satisfaction and fulfillment. People go to watch these horror movies. Can you imagine? Horror movies are expected to give enjoyment. You know it is going to instill fear in us, and still, because people are so terribly bored, they go for these movies, horror movies. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, the emptiness within the heart makes you look for external stimulation. The more the empty the heart is, more empty the heart is, the more you need external stimuli to stimulate the mind. So the Prachitas are saying, unless we look for enjoyment in Krishna, look for satisfaction in devotional service, in Krishna's holy name, in his activities, past hearing his pastimes, till then the mind will keep jumping from one point to another, one object to another. And again, coming back to the same, puna punas charvita charvanana. So, so the next verse, the Prachitas are saying, real devotees or real spiritual seekers hanker for the association of devotees, where there is constant discussion of Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's holy name, Krishna's activities. There is a famous verse, Tulayam Lavenapi Naswargam Napunarbhavam Bhagavat Sangi Sangasya Martyanam Kimutashishaham. This is that verse Prachitas are reciting. In the company of devotees, in the association of devotees, there is constant discussion. There is no chance of the mind looking for happiness and satisfaction in some other object. Here we will find steadiness. Steadiness of the mind, and eventually we will be satisfied and happy. And the purport, Prabhupada quotes this verse of Prabodhananda Saraswati. What is that? Kaivalyam narakayate tridashapur akasha pushpayate. Kaivalyam, or impersonal liberation, or liberation from material sufferings, is like is hellish for a devotee. So even our motivation to practice devotion service could be relief from sufferings. We need to introspect and check out, what is my motivation? Motivation to go back to Godhead, motivation to practice devotional life, is it because I am relieved from my suffering, or is it because I want to render service to Krishna? So even if we achieve liberation by practicing devotional service, eventually we will find it hellish. It will bore us to death. Impersonal kaivalyam narakayate, we will find it hellish. The experience will be hellish. Because there is no activity, it is passive relief from sufferings. Tridashapur Akasha Pushpayate. The heavenly planets or the abodes of the demigods appear to a devotee like phantasmagoria, Prabhupada writes. All this fascinating, glittering enjoyment, either in the heavenly planets or in the luxurious places within the earth, it is like phantasmagoria. Akasha Pushpayate, flowers in the sky, which is imaginary. It's not actually real. So a devotee does not aspire for even material comforts by the practice of devotional service. Durdantendriya Kala Sarpa Patali Protkhata Damshtrayate. The yogis meditate for sense control, but for the devotee the senses appear like serpents with broken teeth. So the senses are there, the body is there, and the sense objects are there, but a devotee's senses are not attracted to the sense objects because he is experiencing higher taste. Rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishtvani vartate. The senses are like broken fangs, and even though the sense objects are there, it won't affect us, it won't tempt us to enjoy. So if you are actually relishing the process of bhakti, then we won't feel attraction towards sense objects. And if we are feeling attracted to sense objects, that means we need to still go deeper and find a relish and satisfaction in the practices of bhakti. The devotee doesn't have to control his senses, for his senses are already engaged in the Lord's service. Consequently, there is no possibility that the senses will act like serpents. In the material condition, the senses are as strong as poisonous snakes. But when the senses are engaged in the Lord's service, they are like poisonous snakes with their fangs removed. And so they are no longer dangerous. Vishwam Purna Sukhayate. The entire world is a replica of Vaikuntha for the devotee because he has no anxiety. So when the materialists find the world an object of, a place of enjoyment, and in the Gita course we hear how Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam, he keeps bombarding people with the material world is a miserable place, not a happy place, always suffering, threefold miseries, birth, old age, disease, death. But a real devotee doesn't perceive these things as even sufferings. He finds everything to be Vaikuntha, Vishwam Purna Sukhayate. And everything as object for Krishna's service, an object to give pleasure to Krishna. So in that sense, a devotee enjoys living in the material world because he finds so much service can be done and everything can be offered to Krishna. Vidhi Mahendra Adishcha Kitayate. He sees that everything belongs to Krishna. He does not even aspire for the position of Lord Brahma or Indra. Mahendra Adishcha Kitayate. That is like a very insignificant position for a devotee. Even the highest position of enjoyment within the material world, a devotee doesn't find it enjoyable. He simply wants to engage everything in the service of the Lord. Yat karunya kataksha vaibhavatam tam gauram evastuma. He stands in his original constitutional position. All this is possible when one receives Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's merciful glance. So this is how a devotee's attitude is towards the material world. Impersonal liberation is elish, heavenly enjoyment is phantasmagoria, but this world, wherever he is living, he considers it as good as Vaikuntha, and he accepts everything in the mood of Yukta Vairagya for the pleasure of Krishna. So therefore a devotee aspires for the association of devotees where he can continuously remain absorbed in Krishna's holy name, Krishna's activities. The next verse of Prachita say, Yatre dyante katham rishta strishnaya prashamo yata nirvairam yatra bhuteshu no dvego yatra kashchana. Wherever pure topics of the transcendental world are discussed, the members of the audience forget all kinds of material hankerings at least for the time being. Not only that, but they are no longer envious of one another, nor do they suffer from anxiety or fear. This is interesting. Wherever this Krishna Katha is discussed, devotees transcend material hankerings, material fear, envy. Typically every mundane association of people, non-devotee association, selfishness is a underlying current between every dealing. Everyone may be apparently helping each other, serving each other, assisting each other in their activities, but underlying current is what I will get out of it, what's in it for me, with every dealing, whether it is studies or business or whatever, even in social position, social dealings, everyone is looking for my personal achievement. But in the association of devotees, it is expected at least that there is no selfish motive, no envy, trace of envy among devotees, all dealings remaining transparent. So if that we can bring about in the association of devotees, then that is as good as Vaikuntha, spiritual world, without any anxiety, people not afraid of exploitation and misuse and abuse. In that association we can actually find happiness and satisfaction. So just as spiritual sound can liberate us from material life, similarly material sound can put us back into sleep. The discussion of Prajalpa and other mundane topics, the sound vibration, whether spiritual or material, is so powerful that it can put us in either situation. In the material situation, when we hear spiritual sound, that sound is so powerful that it can liberate us from material entanglement. But if we continue to hear material sound in the form of mundane subject matter, we can again dive back into material entanglement. That is the power of sound. Therefore, we focus so much on spiritual sound vibration. Starting from early morning program, everything is spiritual sound. Associating our mind with, exposing our mind to spiritual sound, whether in the form of the holy name or the discussion of spiritual literature. The more we expose our mind to spiritual sound vibration, the more we remain untouched by material infection. Devamrita Maharaj, in his book Vedic India, writes about three states of existence. He talks about the dream state, a regular person sleeping, dreaming. So to wake him up, you need sound. You call him up loudly and then the person wakes up. Then we are awake. So the dream breaks and he's awake. But from an enlightened person's point of view, even our awakened state is like a dream. So he writes very nicely. He says, the objects and persons that populate our dream world appear to us as true as the components of our wakeful world. We judge the difference by duration. Dream stuff vanishes in time when we wake up. Awake stuff, though we forget about it when we fall asleep, sticks around day after day to greet us when we arise. But awake stuff also vanishes in time. Vedic teachers describe that the moment of death is very much like a moment a dream breaks. So the point of death is when this dream, wakeful dream of society, friends, family and other things, that dream breaks at that moment of death. And if you are not Krishna conscious, we enter into another wakeful dream. Another body, another family, another society. In this way, so many dreams continue. So from an enlightened person's point of view, spiritually evolved person's point of view, even this is a dream. The whole spiritual culture is meant to revive us wake us up from this dream state. The advantage of the human dream is, within this dream, we can come out of the dream. That is the advantage of this human form of life. Nirdeha madhyam sulabham sudurlabham plavam sukalpam guru karunatha. So this human body affords us that highest opportunity to achieve that spiritually enlightened state where we are completely out of all dreams. And we are in our original constitutional position, serving Krishna, serving devotees in our position as the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. So that's how the whole spiritual process is meant to elevate us to that position. And if you are not serious about exposing our mind to these spiritual vibrations, then the process to come out may take longer. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Bahu janma kare yadi shravana kirtan. We may chant for millions of life, years, year after year, lifetime after lifetime, but if we are not serious about that practice, then it will take much longer. Ideally, we can perfect our life in this very life, but if we are not focused on the process, then it may take much more time. So, therefore, we need to chant our round seriously, study the Bhagavatam seriously, which will keep us reminding us about our dream state and how we need to come out of the dream state. So Uddhava here is expressing his great admiration about the gopis and especially Radharani. Lord Chaitanya also, when he was in his Antilila pastimes in Jagannath Puri, he also expressed this similar mood, exactly like Radharani. Of course, Lord Chaitanya is in the mood of Radharani, Krishna in the mood of Radharani, so he can also exactly identically express the same mood. So there you find in the Antilila where Lord Chaitanya is talking about he is into total internal consciousness, totally unaware of the external surroundings, what is happening outside. Occasionally he would come out into the external state of consciousness. Otherwise he was mostly absorbed in Krishna's pastimes and Krishna's mood, reciting and discussing with Ramanandara and Swarup Damodar. There are instances where Mahaprabhu is rubbing and scratching his face on the wall, scrubbing, and then blood is oozing out in total ecstasy. He's unconscious of his body. Instances where he is running into the ocean, running into the Jagannath's temple, and then devotees are wondering, where has he gone? He was locked inside a room and a guard is kept outside, and everything, no window, no exit in the room, everything is locked, and the devotee standing outside is hearing Lord Chaitanya chanting japa. But after some time, the sound stops. There is no chanting heard. So he feels the Lord is taking rest. And when he goes inside, Lord Chaitanya is missing. Not inside. And he's wondering, from where did he escape? And then he calls everyone and is searching out where the Lord has gone. Finally they search out and they find him in front of the Jagannath temple, Simhadwar. And his body is all deformed, elongated body, sometimes the bones, only the bones are visible, skin and all loosened, and sometimes body is contracted like a pumpkin, and totally deformed shape. So when they see this, they are totally bewildered and confused what to do. So these are all exhibitions of the highest transcendental ecstatic symptoms, and this is what Lord Chaitanya came to award us, these ecstatic Vrindavan mood of loving devotion and loving ecstasy. which was unavailable in the previous ages. Vaikuntha Bhakti was available previous incarnations when they came, this was awarded. But pure Krishna consciousness in the mood of the Vrindavan Vasis, Rajavasis, especially the Gopis, that was unavailable for so long. So when Lord Chaitanya came, this is what his mission was, to give this kind of ecstatic separation, ecstatic loving separation. And if we simply stick to the process of chanting and hearing, one day we can be remain confident of achieving this state. So Uddhava is expressing his similar mood. Uddhava is in total admiration about Radharani's and the Gopis' mood, how they are constantly crying, constantly disturbed. Nanda, Yashoda, the Gopis, Gava, Gopas and Gopis, Radharani, they are constantly in anxiety. Usually when, as time progresses, our if emotions and affection for a person reduces. Yes. Just like if we have a friend, close friend, and then if he goes to some other place, we may remain in touch for some time, email, through letters, phone. But then the emotional attachment gradually reduces over a period of time. But in the case of Gopis and Krishna, as time progresses, the emotions are increasing. The attachment is increasing, and the feelings of separation is increasing, and they're constantly disturbed. So Uddhava is therefore totally in a state of admiration, and is praying, when can I be born in this land of Vrindavan as a blade of grass, so that when the gopis walk on this land, they will step upon me and somehow I will get their mercy. So when Vidura, in the third canto we find this section where when Vidura is asking Uddhava about Krishna's disappearance and Krishna's activities, there also Uddhava again goes into trance. And you find this section. Uddhava appeared to be awakened from slumber when Vidura asked this question. He appeared to regret that he had forgotten the lotus feet of the Lord. Thus he again remembered the lotus feet of the Lord and remembered all his transcendental loving service unto him. And by so doing, he felt the same ecstasy that he used to feel in the presence of the Lord. Because the Lord is absolute, there is no difference between his remembrance and his personal presence. Thus Uddhava remained completely silent for a moment, but then he appeared to be going deeper and deeper into ecstasy. Feelings of ecstasy are displayed by highly advanced devotees of the Lord. There are 8 kinds of transcendental changes in the body: tears, shivering of the body, perspiration, restlessness, throbbing, choking of the throat, etc. And all were manifested by Uddhava in the presence of Vidura. So these are all ecstatic symptoms. Prabhupada has explained in great detail in the Nectar of Devotion various kinds of ecstatic symptoms. And Sahaji is also expressed this, but we have to be careful about how imitation ecstatic symptoms are different from the original bona fide symptoms of ecstasy. So many times we find so-called practitioners of spiritual life, practitioners of bhakti, they also many times display these symptoms. But we should not be carried away by their ecstasy, and we need to understand what is genuine, what is real, what is bona fide. So that's all I have to say. Any questions, any comments? Anyone has any thoughts? Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.